in MacPherson. Or we can continue on that note, maybe some, and also Honorable Benson Namashe. Thank you very much. Honorable Zwak?
No, thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for this opportunity. I won't be long, my Chair. I think where I am, I've got the problem, one with the network. So just to just request you that I just switched off my video. Chair, on the issue for the gambling, I wanted to check, you know, I don't know, maybe if I got the presentation, if maybe members got the presentation, because I was trying to look in my email, but I didn't get their presentation, so that you could able to prepare. Remember, some of us have just joined this committee. So it would have been nice that we have this presentation prior, and probably maybe we can be appraised in terms of what has been done, so that we can probably give a meaningful, you know, the contribution, and also maybe bring in some new angles and dimensions to be able to take this matter forward. So we will just maybe in the future just request that, can you please get these presentations on time, even if it's a day or 2 days before, so that we can do a thorough check, so that we can advise and be able to assist proper. But on the thing of the gaming, I wanted to check, I won't be discussing that the process itself. I wanted to check on that edge, where does it actually protect? Is it strong in terms of protecting those who are gamblers? Remember, this thing is actually, I look at it as an exploitation of the poor, or of the poor, because as you all know that our grandmothers, they take all their monies and go to these casinos and sit there and, you know, waste the money and play it. Are we able to capture that into this act? Because at the end, we must just say who stands to benefit on this. Obviously, the casino owners exploiting the poor and the working class, those who don't have anything. So I wanted to ask the department, are there any of those controls, stringent controls, in terms of ensuring that, you know, you don't have people who will go there and waste their money? Because at the end, this act must be able to protect the people out there. And also, I wanted to check with the department on what's your view on this game that is done in the locations and in the informal settlements in China. Will this, you know, so what does this act say about that? Are we having a control on that? We implemented that. So that is the question on that act there, on the one for the gambling. On the IP Act, the department would actually guide me. Is that, you know, I'm taking it on the lessons learned from the COVID. You know, when we wanted the IP to be used for human benefit, for the benefit of the humankind. In this IP Act, you will guide me if maybe I'm incorrect. Is it possible that, or is there a clause that captures a part where it says that this IP can be relaxed for the benefit of the humankind? And are we able to really capture that at some point? If only Greeny here has developed something that can benefit the humankind and applied an IP on it, did we capture anywhere that says that you can use that? The government can expropriate that and use it for the humankind. It is a sort of a medicine and all of that. And then the other one, on the credit act, did it capture, you know, that majority of the people are on the credit bureau, And then there are these debt companies which are abusing these process where they buy a debt from, let's say I have a debt in Standard Bank, or I have a debt in Edgar's, wherever. And then they start chasing you and intimidate you, come to the house with guns and all of that, and trying to confiscate things. So is this debt able to capture that? Because at some point now there's this mushrooming of these debt collectors and all of that. And also you find that what you had a debt now with the Standard Bank, now Standard Bank lifts you. Now all of a sudden now you are listed with some law firm you don't even know. And then after 3 to 4 years, again, there's another law firm. So there's this selling of debt like that. So does this act capture that so that our poor people are not being exploited in terms of those things? One of the last questions, before Nkhali Phansi, these are just the questions of interest, is to say, when was the last review on the gambling done? There was a Gambling Review Commission report in 2011. Have there been any other reviews that were there? And another one is that, to what extent have the recommendations of this review been adopted or implemented? And what are we doing in terms to protect against proliferation of gambling opportunities? And what controls are there? I think, let me pause there. Maybe if it's possible, get another bite, because I don't want to spend a lot of time on this issue, because I need to familiarize myself as well and get into all these, these acts. And probably if when a chair, there is a document or a summary of these acts somewhere, that will give us a history, what was there, what has been amended, what are the proposals. It will probably assist the committee, especially those, some of us who are actually new into the committee. I thank you, my acting chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mali Mecha, followed by Honorable Matheson and Honorable Drake.
Thank you, Acting Chair. Let me take this opportunity to also congratulate you. Good morning, colleagues. Me and the team also extend.
Yeah, morning. Can you try to raise your voice, Honorable Malimensha, because we hardly hear you. Your voice is fading a bit. Can you just?
Am I audible now? Comrade,
yeah, we are audible now. Stay there, leadership. Yes.
Good morning, colleagues, GM and the team. Let me take this opportunity to also congratulate you on a new acting post. But I extend my sincere condolences to the Herman's family. In the absence of chair, we understand what she's going through. Her loss is our loss. We wish they to comfort her. Allow me to take this opportunity, Comrade Chair, to welcome this presentation. Very informative presentation that I think the department have done everything possible to ensure that it covers things that were very outstanding for some of us. However, Comrade Chair, I would want you to grant me permission to just for clarity seeking questions of some sort. One will be some of the reasons why the provinces had problem with the National Gambling Amendment Bill was that it sought to give the National Gambling Policy Council powers to make decisions in the second meeting, while the first meeting did not have a quorum. This was bound to create problems. What was the logic behind this? If I may get that. Then the last one will be, one of the challenges identified in the Consumer Protection Act is the need to extend the focus of the Act on a trade in illicit goods. However, this is not addressed in the recommendations. Why is this state? Why is this the case? And how will the Act ensure that it practically deals with illicit trade? Allow me to pause there. Thank you very much.
Honorable Professor, thanks Chair, and really our thoughts and prayers are with the Herman's family and the loss of a child. There can be nothing more devastating than that. That's not how it's supposed to be, and so my thoughts and prayers are really with Honorable Herman's and her family in this devastating time. And if there's anything that we can do, I hope that they will let us know. Chair, you know, there's a wonderful saying that history has no blank pages. And luckily, I'm young enough to have a fairly decent memory to remember many of the contentious conversations that have taken place in this committee and with the departments regarding legislation. Because much of the legislation that has been spoken about today has very sound warnings that were made over many years that were ignored by the committee and were ignored by the department. And when many of those concerns were raised and many obvious problems with bills, we were simply told that we were politically grandstanding or scoring cheap political points or tap dancing to some masters or some other rubbish that was put before us in defense of what was the indefensible. And I want to start with the gambling amendment bill. Because when that bill came to this committee, I specifically warned the committee, and I said then, and it was in V119, I think it was, I specifically said there that your ANC-owned provinces will not accept this bill because it seeks to take away powers from the provinces that are legislated to them concurrently, and there are only two spaces for them to do so. One is in liquor legislation and the other one is gambling. I said, you seek to take powers away from provinces, and mark my words, your own ANC provinces will reject this bill when it gets to the NCOP. And historically, that's exactly what took place. ANC provinces, run provinces, rejected a bill from an ANC-run government. And just think about how historic that is. And when we warned them and when we said many of the concerns that the Honorable Malamacha has just articulated before me, they were all dismissed and they were ignored. And so we are now sitting in the problem and the space where that bill has still never been dealt with. And the department is still trying to scratch at the surface when there's many other issues that have never been dealt with within the 2008 Review Commission and within subsequent amendments, more so dealing with remote or online gambling. And that gambling continues to take place unregulated without any forms of protection for consumers in South Africa and without any possibility to generate revenue. And so while the department continues to try and save face for a failed bill, and let me tell you the reason why there is no mediation or the meetings are being cancelled of mediation, because no province wants to actually mediate in this process. They don't want this bill. And really, Chair, I think that it is another lesson, and unfortunately, we seem to continue to want to learn a lot of lessons in this committee, that maybe for once, the committee should listen to opposition MPs, listen to their concerns, and stop dismissing them just because they come from the opposition. Because I warned this committee that this is exactly what would happen, and it is exactly what has happened. The department, I warned the department then in 2018, and they chose to steamroll the amendment through because they wanted something to be able to tick the boxes to justify their bonuses and to say that they were actually doing something in terms of legislation. It was garbage then, and it is garbage now. We should be going back to the drawing board. But luckily, I have saved the department some time, and I have formulated the remote gambling bill, which I have reintroduced into Parliament as a private member's bill,
and I'm sure that they are going to support it because all of the ANC-run provinces now support the bill. Then I'd like to turn my attention to the National Credit Amendment Bill. And I think it is hilarious that on page 41, the department finally admits that there are implementation problems with the bill and its cost effectiveness. And a review is now taking place of the bill. And we warned then when this bill came towards Parliament, again, just before the elections, that this was nothing other than an election bill. It was unimplementable, and they were never going to get the funding for it. Again, unfortunately, members of this committee chose to ignore us, called us all sorts of names, and decided to proceed with the bill. Again, the department ignored all of our concerns and proceeded with the bill. 3 years later, the bill has not been implemented because they have finally woken up to exactly what we told them then, 4 years ago, that this bill was not workable, there was no funding that existed for it. So, you know, I have very little sympathy for the department that is now effectively trying to dump bills on our desk 18 months before an election because they have very little to show for what they've done over the last 3 years. And I think, Chair, that there is a time that must come in this committee where we actually deal with bills as honest brokers, where we actually decide and hopefully want to listen to members of the opposition, because we say things not because we have nothing better to do, than because we actually have real concerns over issues of bills, the implementability and the effectiveness. And those are just two examples of bills that have done, that have stalled and have actually gone nowhere. And I think it should be a real shame on members of this committee that were in the fifth parliament and the department that we find ourselves in the position that we do today. Turning to the protection, the Promotion and Protection of Investment Acts, which ironically does neither of the two stated objectives, the reason we were told that we had to have this act then is that South Africa was going to stop concluding bilateral investment treaties. It has continued to do a bilateral investment treaties. So I'd like to know from the department, why is it that there is one form of protection that is offered to countries that we seek to install bilateral investment treaties with, and then we subject other countries to the Promotion and Protection of Investment Act, which does neither. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Can we have Honorable Benson Namashe, followed by Honorable Benson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and once again, I really want to congratulate you for the acting capacity and also welcome the presentation by the department. I will not be long owing to the challenges with my voice. I'm not sure if I cannot switch off my, or rather, I may as well continue. Chair, we all know that access to finance in South Africa has always been predicated on the policy compendium that is entirely entrenched on capitalist propositions. And over and above that, it has been a contentious matter which has always been racialized and therefore as an important transformational imperative. It has always been important to make sure that we develop a legislative regime that is able to redress that kind of a historical injustice and begin to come up with legislative instruments that place the working class at the center in terms of access to resources. Because that's how we will change the socioeconomic challenges of different households. Now, if you look into the National Credit Act, perhaps it may be relevant to ask this question as to how does the National Credit Act correct the challenges of debt review faced by most working class people. Many people, Chair, after being placed under debt review, no, they struggle to get the names removed from debt review, which limits their ability to apply for credit in the future. And this is very, 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 very critical. It talks to the heart of what I just prefaced with. The second question, Chair, also linked to that, what happens when the debt counselor determines that the credit advanced to a debtor was reckless? So you do find that those kind of situations. And so in other words, what would be the recourse or the remedy sought from the court once this is reported? There are credit providers that are unscrupulous and notorious about this. The third question, Chair. We do note the recommendations of the regulatory impact assessment of the National Credit Amendment Act to the NCAB, you know, where it indicates that the act has areas that could impact the economy and have unintended consequences. So can we get clarity on the specifics of how this will negatively impact the economy and vulnerable consumers? We have a responsibility to make sure that the consumer is protected from the hawkish tendencies of those who are in control of the production, which by extension they are in control of the value chains, which ultimately affect our people negatively. And the last question, Chair, if we observe since the enactment of the Protection of Investment Act, one is tempted to ask a question as to how has this had a positive impact on foreign direct investment in the country? And linked to that, how different and efficient has this legislation proven to be from bilateral investment treaties. This is also very critical, because these treaties must be able to respond to fundamental economic challenges as they would relate to investment opportunities. Thank you very much, Chair.
Chair, can I proceed?
Yeah, continue, Mr. Green.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, firstly, the ACDP also wishes to offer its condolences to the Honorable Hermans and the family. Indeed, I think it ought to be children who bury their parents and not the other way around. So our condolences and prayers go to the Hermans family at their time of loss and bereavement. Chair, just maybe four questions, and I'll try to just be specific with regards to these questions. The first is with regards to the National Gambling Act. I think it's common knowledge that gambling has a devastating effect on families, particularly where a member or members have become addicted to gambling. And so certainly one wishes to put in place measures to actually limit the negative impact that gambling has on families. Now, with that said, what enforcement measures are in place? So legislation is there. The challenge is sometimes with enforcement. And what are the enforcement measures that are in place to ensure or to prevent the overstimulation for latent gamblers, particularly children and perhaps even young adults. You know, as an example, you sometimes have adverts which will say, don't drink and drive. And then at prime time, family time, you'll have another advert saying, down a lion, feel satisfied. So there are these mixed messages that sometimes also go out. And we talk about reducing overstimulation. But then we sometimes have adverts on gambling that are also at prime family time, which can also target children and young adults. So what are the measures, if any, that are in place to reduce this overstimulation for latent gamblers? Secondly, what is the consideration given? What consideration has been given to the combining of the lottery and the National Gambling Boards Commission into one entity? I believe that this recommendation has been laid on the table, and has any thought been given to this particular consideration? And then with regards to the RIA, the regulatory impact assessments on the Consumer Property Act or Consumer Protection Act, what time frames are there for this regulatory impact assessment to be concluded? And then my last question is with regards to the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Act. Are there, or what interim measures are currently in place to prevent the abuse of indigenous knowledge, cultural indigenous knowledge, art, designs? You see some of these designs can only be found in some of your deep rural areas. But somehow these designs or indigenous knowledge which belongs to our communities, our indigenous communities, our local communities, somehow these designs are found in Paris, Milan, Tokyo, New York, London, and so on. And so what kind of interim measures, if any, are in place to prevent the abuse or the theft of indigenous knowledge. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you very much. I think the DG is able to see the questions from the chat. Or can you please assist us, Honorable Secretariat Andre, to read through the question from the chat from Honorable Motau. Then we'll hand over to the DM and the team for response. Thank you.
Chair, with regard to the question on the chat, is the question is, since the enactment of the Protection Investment Act, how has this had a positive impact on foreign direct investment in the country? Secondly, how different and efficient has this legislation proven to be from a bilateral investment treaty perspective? Thanks, Chair.
Okay, no, thank you very much. DM, you will guide in terms of the response. And while if those response cannot be dealt with, I think it will be proper as well for the department that you can write them down and forward to the secretariat for members to get the clarity seeking question. Thank you, DM. Over to you.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. Chairperson, there are broad comments that the honorable members have made that I would like to come back to comment on. But I would like to suggest that we go back to the acting DG, would hand over to Dr. Masota firstly, to answer the specific questions that honorable members have raised. And there are representatives from our different entities, so they may give explanations to some of the specific questions that the honorable members have asked. So I will ask the acting DG to guide us through the responses, and with your permission, Chair, I can respond to some of the issues, Honorable Benson Ngamashe and Honorable McPherson had raised the broader questions that they raised at the end of the answer session. So with your permission, if we can go back to the acting DG, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Chairperson, there were a number of questions posed around gambling, mainly in the area of how do we protect the vulnerable and what are the enforcement measures in place. I will ask Dr. Evelyn Mosocha, and I do know the colleagues from the National Gambling Board are in the room. They'll be able to provide a lot more more color to exactly what's been done there. On the issue of intellectual property, I think the question that Honorable Swaku raised around intellectual property used for humankind, Chair, what I would like to maybe just also kindly request Ms. Nikki Kruger as well to also indicate the work that the team has done at the World Trade Organization in terms of the TRIPS waiver, in which vaccines were then allowed to be produced in countries in during the period of the pandemic. And I think that is a very good example of how intellectual property and the TRIPS waiver has assisted in that regard. The issues around the National Credit Amendment Bill, I think Honourable McPherson has raised that, as well as remote and online gambling. Evelyn will touch on that. But Chair, on the Protection of the Investment Act, what I want to indicate is that there is quite a considerable bit of work that's been done in this area. South Africa is in the process of terminating those bits which would then expire. All bits have had an expiration date, and obviously with the introduction of the Act, we couldn't immediately terminate all bits. But there is a considerable bit of work being done at the moment. For example, in the Africa Continental Free Trade negotiations, the team has already started negotiating a protocol on investment, which will then regulate how investment will be dealt with on the continent. So there is a lot of work being done in that area, and Nikki will also be able to expand on that. Chair, and then the one around the combination of National Lotteries Commission and the National Gambling Board, the one by Honourable, the question by Honourable Tring. Chair, you would see also in our annual performance plan in the current financial year, the Minister has indicated that there's two areas which we are looking as a department to sort of consolidate the work. The first one being reducing the number of programs or branches within the department, and the second one is in the area of the entities. So there is currently research being undertaken to understand, or work being undertaken to understand exactly which areas can be consolidated. And obviously the area of lotteries and gambling is one specific area, but obviously that work is still being undertaken, and once that is clear, the necessary regulatory processes will then unfold. Here, with your permission, I would then like to hand over to firstly Dr. Evelyn Masocha, and then to Ms. Nikki Kruger immediately thereafter to then respond to the very specific questions. And if the National Gambling Board, I think a lot of questions around gambling, if they would like to also add to what Evelyn has to say. Thank you, Chair. If I can then invite Evelyn.
Thank you, Acting DG. Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you, Honourable Members, for those questions. I will respond to some of them, and then I will indicate the colleagues from the entities who will also assist with the other questions. I think for the order, maybe after I finish, Nikki can then speak, and then I'll indicate the names of the other colleagues who can follow from there. So starting with the questions by Honorable Twaku. Honorable Twaku, I've noted your concerns related to the protection of our communities when it comes to gambling, and the fact that the vulnerable people end up using their limited resources, finances, to go to gamble at casinos. It is a concern. And in terms of the National Gambling Amendment Bill, the current bill, this issue is not addressed directly in that bill. But with the National Gambling Act and other programs we have as government and the National NGB, we do have instances where we do education and awareness when we talk to communities about issues of gambling, as an example of some of the measures that we have. And there is a link we have with the National Gambling Responsible Program that also looks at supporting persons who are affected by gambling-related issues, especially when it comes to issues of gambling addiction. This area is one of the issues that requires ongoing support, ongoing engagement with the communities, because although it can be legislated, it talks to human behavior. When a parent receives a grant for to assist with their livelihood, they take that money, then they go and they gamble with that. So it may not necessarily be a legislative issue per se, although it talks to protection, but it talks to the behavior and education about gambling, its implications, the fact that it's a harmful activity that can lead to issues of addiction and have other consequences that were not anticipated. But we have noted this also for further consideration in terms of what are the other options, what we can look at to reach out more to communities, to talk to them about the harmful effects of gambling, even though they see it as an opportunity to make more income. another gambling mode that has a potential of addiction in that manner is the lotteries. And the thing about it is that because of the amounts, when you buy these tickets, it may not seem like much, but it also has that similar kind of effect. So it's a very important question that you've raised, Honorable Zwaku. On the question of FASI, this matter is currently FASI is an illegal gambling activity in the country. FASI is not legislated. Regulators, NLC, for instance, does look at issues of FASI as it's linked closely to the issues of the lotteries. They do look at the FASI issue in terms of from their research, from research, but also in terms of engaging with other regulators around these issues. The way we look at FASI currently is from an illegal gambling context. It's an illegal gambling activity. So those who are found participating in it, it will be from an illegal perspective. So it's not allowed. And I know that regulators are grappling with FASI. They are looking at ways that it can be combated. So from an illegal gambling activity perspective, this is one of the areas that we are grappling with. But I do know that regulators are looking at it, especially the NLC, from the engagements we've had with them, they are monitoring the situation of FASI. There's always room, of course, for tightening some of these areas in the legislation. So the issue of FASI is noted as part of the questions that we raised. For Mr. Madimeja, on the issue of the gambling as well and the legislation, what has happened, I will talk to the issue of the National Gambling Policy Council to indicate that on the issue of the National Gambling Policy Council, one can look at it from an administrative perspective to say it's only a meeting. And a quorum, and of course, what is the main issue with the quorum? The problem with that is that when you need to make key policy decisions, and the policy decisions have got implications for how you set the structure of protection, of setting the scene in the country on a matter of gambling, for instance, you do need buy-in from provinces because of the concurrent nature of the function, and so of the mandate. So the norms and standards and having different provinces agreeing on a way forward is very critical. So it has been a challenge that there has not been a quorum over many years in some instances where decisions cannot be taken, but they're noted. So certain changes cannot happen because we need a uniform approach across the provinces and the national. So the logic has been that maybe by making a stronger point of imposing that if in the first meeting there was no agreement, there was no quorum, in the next meeting, even if there's no quorum of 5 MECs and the minister, a decision can still be taken because of the importance of a policy decision that is required. So that is where the logic is coming from. Other options were tried. For example, repeatedly confirming, checking, is the MEC available? And only to find that they've been confirming, but on the last day, they are not coming. Or they send an apology in the morning, the MEC has to go to another engagement. So the quorum has affected how the Policy Council operates in general. And so we think that this was a proposal that was put on the table to assist, to ensure that there's harmonization and control in terms of the regulation of gambling in the country in a concurrent environment that we find ourselves in because of the constitution. In terms of the illicit goods, the recommendations that we made, in the slides, we emphasize some of the areas. They are not like final areas. They're just some of the options that the research identified as options for further consideration. We are still going to look at the different options that were presented in the regulatory impact assessment study. And part of on the illicit goods, for example, we'll look at the options of inspections, the role of the NCC, the role of other regulators. How does it interrelate with other regulators that deals with illicit goods? So in terms of why the recommendation is not on the other slide, it's because we're just highlighting to the members, honorable members, these are some of the issues that came from there. research, but it's not cast in stone. There's still further public participation that we need to do to get to the final options that will then be presented in the public, also presented ultimately to the committee at some point. So I just wanted to just highlight there to say that we just brought them there to show that something was done. There was a regulatory impact study. It's out there, and we are finalizing it as a, and we are working now on looking at the different options and also looking at consulting with stakeholders. And coming back to some of the points raised by Honorable Twaku, the DG spoke to the issue of the Patents Act when it comes to the human benefits. For instance, on medicine is related to the patents, and I know that my colleague Nikki will speak to that issue. It does not come in the issues around the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Act, but it's an important point that I've noted. Also, on the credit bureau, bureaus and the abuse when they buy debt from other suppliers, and then they then put the burden on the consumer. This issue will then be, I will then allocate it to my colleague Tupang Maholego from the NCR to talk to that in terms of more practical implementation perspective of what they do about such incidences when they happen. Also, she will also talk about the selling of debt, when the debt is being sold, what are the implications because of the exploitation that sometimes occurs to the consumer. In the current amendment bill, for the Amendment Act, this issue is not addressed there, but I know that it's one of the areas that we also are looking at for strengthening in the future amendments. But I know that as a regulator, there's work that they may be doing around these areas that they can speak to in a more tangible manner to assist with what we are doing collectively to address this issue. Honorable McPherson, I want to thank you for the input you've made today. I think in terms of legislative development and policy making, we need to listen to all voices. And it's correct to also say that when there is criticism of what we do, sometimes the critique can help to improve a process. So I noted all the input you've made and the journey you took the committee through on what happened with the department, and what has also happened with the role of the committee. There's always lessons to be learned, and I think that going forward, there are things that we can strengthen based on this wisdom received from persons like yourselves who know the historical context of issues and where things can be. And we've noted the private members bill that has been gazetted, that has been put out. We've noted it, and it's something that we'll also engage with by the department. So we've noted it, and to say that we will participate in those processes. And thank you for your contribution to this debate. We can only strengthen our work going forward. Honorable McPherson asked a question about the why is there one form of protection for other countries when it comes to the investment legislation. Ms. Nikki will talk to that point as well around the protection and the differentiation around the different countries. Honorable Twaku also asked about the review of the Gambling Act.
As I indicated earlier on that I'm in transit, can I request the Honorable Benson Amashe to continue with the remainder of the sitting until I'm done with the meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. It's just that my voice is hoarse. You can continue with the meeting.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, so on the issue of the, when was the last review of the gambling done? It was in 2011, Honorable Zogu, as you've indicated. And some of the recommendations that were in that, in the review was taken, they were taken into consideration. It looked at different modes of gambling. It also looked at how we need to move forward based on the new modes of gambling that were identified, that were coming into the picture. It talked to different aspects of the of gambling, and of course we had to consider them and look at how best we move forward. As we move to the next phases of reviewing the law in terms of the National Gambling Act, we could also go back to some of them and review them further, because it was at a particular point in time when we were looking at the current situation where we were at the time. So much has happened since then to now, and there's been different developments. Our country has moved to different areas, so there's room for further review and to take some of the recommendations forward. But we did take them into account. One of the main considerations was around the balancing of extending new modes of gambling, the economic implications of the gambling situation in the country, and also protection and ensuring that there is a clearer and strengthened regulatory framework in the country for gambling. So in terms of the protection of the public, we continuously identify measures to look at how to protect the public against the harmful effects of gambling. And I think that my colleague, Mr. Ngwadze Mashamaite, will talk to some of the practical things that are being dealt with by the National Gambling Board to look at implementation of some of the programs dealing with support to the communities around gambling. Also, we do our own education awareness from time to time, going into the public communities, rural communities, talking to some of these issues around gambling, because it is a societal issue, and also talking to the behaviors around the way gambling is looked at. In terms of Chair, your questions around the comments around the role of credit on transformation, on the economy, on uplifting our society, of changing the historical context of ensuring that there are more benefits. Those points have been noted. And if the questions you've raised is around getting out of debt review, for consumers who struggle to get out of debt review, who end up not being able to have access to credit, and also what happens when debt counselors they are reckless. So what happens when there's recklessness? What is the role of debt counselors, and what recourse is available? I've noted those questions, and I would prefer that Ms. Ntupa Makhuleho addresses them from the way that the regulator NCR deals with these issues when they come across. I think it's important that they provide that practical implementation level of how they deal with some of these issues when they come. Then on the regulatory impact assessment, the unintended consequences that were identified in the research. Some of them, Mr. McPherson did mention them. For example, the issue of the cost to the economy, the cost of this to the fiscus. There will be a cost to government, because that intervention legislation is meant to be for free for the consumers. Instead of them having to also be charged, it was intended to be free, and the role of the regulators, the administration of it, and the processes and everything. So the cost to the fiscus. Another notable point raised was the cost to the cost of credit to the vulnerable consumer. One of the most notable points was that as much as the Act is intended to protect consumers, the implications are it was going to make them worse off, because the financial services sector, the industry, was going to have a challenge with consumers who are not able to, who are at risk in terms of meeting their obligations. So while it was intended to be a process that simplifies things for consumers, they can rearrange their debts, it was also going to make them vulnerable, because now the financial sector will avoid that target group, and then there will be implications for the informal machinists now, who will then exploit the situation. So the research did highlight other issues around the costing of this process to the economy, and how it can even affect the perception around the macroeconomy. So we did take them into consideration, and we were also thinking that we need to be prudent, given that the economy as it stands has faced so many challenges, and recently with the different developments, in 2019, we did not have the hindsight of now, when there has been other developments that occurred, from COVID to the unrest and the floods. And so the implications are more now where we are as a country. So I think that we took that into consideration, the challenges with the implications, the possible implications. And going to Honorable Sring, on the issues around the the issues around gambling, the adverts that do come across without the proper warnings, and the vulnerability of young children and teenagers. I'm going to also ask Mr. Nkwazi Mashamaite to talk to this issue around what is it that as a regulator, NGB, they are doing around the issues of advertising and looking at how to address protection of children and vulnerable persons from overstimulation of gambling. So I would prefer that we address them not from a theoretical legislative point of view, but from a practical implication perspective. So Mr. Nkwazi, please note these questions around vulnerability, measures in place to address the overstimulation, plus the issues of adverts. What are we doing around those? And the question that was also asked was, what is being done about the National Gambling Board and the National Lotteries Commission? We have started looking at this question, and as the DG has indicated, the department is also looking at a fit-for-purpose structure, not only in terms of the internal department, but the entities as well, for being effective, a more effective organization. So this debate is ongoing. We did a study on the lotteries as well, and this also was one of the areas that we looked at in terms of the possibilities around that. So we have started looking into this issue. It's an important area, and even the regulators have given an indication to some extent what they think about it. So we are doing something, Honorable Sring, and hopefully sooner there will be more direction in terms of the way forward around this possibility. So it's not yet a decision, it's just a discussion on the table that is being assessed, and the implications of it and what it could mean for the shape of the regulatory institutional mechanism in the country. On the regulatory impact assessment for the Consumer Protection Act, we have not yet set timelines, Honorable Sring, but we have started with the development of looking at the policy options, and we will be undertaking a policy process around this and engaging with experts and other stakeholders and other bodies to ensure that we address the options and we start to look at how do we then take the work that was done forward. The regulatory impact study was completed in 2021 around March, so we completed it. So now we are looking at taking it further in terms of the policy development process and looking into the different options that are out in the to look at how to strengthen the current legislation, the CPA. And on the Intellectual Property Laws Amendment Act, the measures in place to protect the exploitation of the traditional intellectual property wherein they are exploited, they are found in other countries like Paris, Milan, Tokyo. On that point, it is a concern, and that's why we had to come up with the legislative framework, because measures have to be, especially in a regulated type of industry, they have to be supported by regulations. So this act was intended to ensure that further protection. Now that it is not yet in force, it's an area of concern, it's a gap. And even the Department of Science and Innovation, their legislation is looking at this to a large extent as well. So I think that there are different roles that different departments are playing around this, like DSI. But from a CIPC point of view, I will ask my colleagues, Dr. Goele and Ms. Nomonde Maimela, to maybe talk to what have they been doing around this area, especially some other measures, not necessarily legislative, in terms of protecting the traditional knowledge of the traditional knowledge around the exploitation of our society on their IP knowledge and so on. I know that their work was going to be informed more by the legislation, but in case there is certain measures they have, they can just share their perspective around that issue. So Chair, from my side, I think these are all the questions that I managed to identify from the discussions and from the order that the DG has given. Ms. Kruger will speak to her areas of investment act And following from her, I will then recommend that we start with Ms. Ntupang Makgulego to speak to the issues around debt review, exploitation, selling of debt, and also to speak to the issues. After her, it will be Mr. Nkwazamasha Maite to talk to the implementation and the measures by the National Gambling Board on issues of gambling. Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. I will stop there and then hand over back to you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Dr. Masoja. Can we follow the order as you have advised, and make sure that whoever is presenting is also cognizant of the time and the challenges of connectivity. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I'll be very very quick in the interest of time, as you've indicated. The Acting DG has asked that I also just talk briefly about the TRIPS waiver in the WTO, and then there was two questions on investment, the section of investment bill in relation to the termination of bilateral investment treaties, and then the impact of the Protection of Investment Act. In terms of the TRIPS waiver that the Acting DG has asked me to talk about, TRIPS, as the Honourable Members will know, is the agreement on trade-related aspects of intellectual property rights that is an international legal agreement between all the members of the World Trade Organization. In last year, South Africa and India proposed a TRIPS waiver in the World Trade Organization for purposes of COVID. And at the 12th Ministerial Conference that happened in June, WTO Ministerial Conference that happened in June this year, a ministerial decision was taken in terms of the waiver. And basically what the waiver provides for, or this agreement provides for, is that it allows governments to authorize local manufacturers to produce vaccines or the ingredients, substances or elements, and utilize processes which are covered by patents without the permission of the patent holder during the pandemic. It also allows for exports of these products that are then so manufactured. Chair, in terms of this, maybe just to quickly highlight that the department has prepared a patent bill, and that this patent bill will be coming shortly to the portfolio committee for further consideration. In terms of the questions on the Protection of Investment Act, there was a question from Honourable McPherson in terms of bilateral investment treaties and why only some bilateral investment treaties has been terminated and why some countries are protected under bilateral investment treaties and others are protected under the Investment Act. I want to first just clarify that all investments, whether from any country and also domestic investment, is protected under the Protection of Investment Act. It is correct that there is still some bilateral investment treaties that is in place. We have started the termination process of the bilateral investment treaties, and these treaties really provide for fixed term periods that they are in place, and either it's been renewed automatically for another fixed term, or it is then continues until after a fixed period until it is terminated in line with the provisions of the specific bilateral investment treaty. So using the specific provisions in the different bilateral investment treaties, the termination process has started for what we will call the so-called first generation bilateral investment treaties, and that process is still ongoing. So there's not different treatments for different countries. The first bilateral investment treaties that we entered into was with mostly with European countries. So those are the first where we started terminating in terms of the fixed term periods that was set out in those agreements. The, as the acting DG has indicated, in relation to our bilateral investment treaties with African countries, these are being dealt with under the current negotiations that is ongoing on the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, where we have started to negotiate also an investment protocol. In relation to the question from Honourable Motsoeng in terms of the impact of the Protection of Investment Act and how it may be different or better than the bilateral investment treaties. We should keep in mind that it is not only, of course, the Protection of Investment Act or that sets the framework for investment. Global conditions and economic growth is also factors that should be taken into account that affects investment flows. Investors want to know that there's a robust legal system in place protecting investment when they invest. South Africa provides such a environment under the Protection of Investment Act, under the Constitution. We are a mature foreign direct investment economy, and foreign investors are already well established across all of the sectors of the economy. Importantly, what should be recalled is that since the implementation of the Protection of Investment Act in 2018 and the start of the President's Investment Mobilization Drive, 1.1 trillion of investment was attracted to South Africa. As I've indicated during the presentation, we have not received any specific concerns from investors in regard to the implementation of the Protection of Investment Act. They actively still invest in South Africa. The Act also provides for mediation provisions that can be used by investors when they do have any concerns. And these provisions are implemented in close cooperation with Invest South Africa to ensure that investors' concerns are addressed. And I think it can be seen with the type of investment that we've attracted over the last 4 years, the amount and the sectors where investment is taking place, that the Protection of Investment Act do put in place a very attractive framework. We can respond further and more details in writing, Chair, in the interest of time. Thank you very much.
Let's proceed with that order, the next presenter.
Thank you, Chairperson. And my name is Nchupa Mahole. I represent the National Credit Regulator. And there were three questions that were posed that relate directly to the work of the National Credit Regulator. The first one is the selling of debt. And the second one being, the last one being the outcome of instances where debt cancellers find a credit agreement to be reckless. What recourse can they obtain for consumers?
You seem to have frozen.
Chair, to you, can we take the next presenter? I think is the colleague from the National Gambling Board, in the interest of time.
Yeah, because she seems to have frozen.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, can we do that?
Apologies, it looks like I got disconnected. So on the question of the selling of debt, just to be quick, legislation has already identified that there are exploitation related to the setting of the SHTY provision was introduced in 2015, trying to cap some of the exploitation. This provision essentially deals with the selling of prescribed debt. It was identified that some claim providers tend to sell debt that are over 3 years old, and in terms of the prescription act, they are essentially not allowed to collect those debts. So in terms of the new provision now, it is actually a prohibited conduct for a claim provider to sell to another person, be it a debt collector or a new claim provider, a debt that has already prescribed. So to a certain extent, some of the exploitations relating to the selling of debt are already being dealt with under the current legislation, the National Credit Act. On the second question of exiting debt review, the challenges related to this issue of exiting debt review have been dealt with also currently under the law. Especially in terms of the National Credit Act, consumers who apply for debt review are able to exit debt review once they pay all their debts that are related to the debt review application. But secondly, the courts have already also granted some kind of guidelines in terms of consumers who believe they are no longer over indebted. So for those consumers who believe they are no longer over indebted, the courts have already provided a guideline to say that those consumers who believe they are no longer over indebted can provide the proof to the court so that the court can then declare them no longer over indebted and therefore exit their debt review. So under the current legal framework, there is mechanisms in place that allow consumers to exit debt review. Those who possibly are not able to exit currently is either because they are still over indebted and they deserve to continue to be protected under the debt review mechanism, or there are those who are placed under debt review fraudulently by debt cancellers, and those are dealt with in terms of the enforcement mandate of the National Credit Act, where we are able to approach the Digital Consumer Tribunal to obtain orders that will force the debt cancellers that place consumers fraudulently under debt review to remove them from debt cancelling. And lastly, on the question of the redress that is available to consumers who debt cancellers have identified that some of their credit agreements have been granted recklessly, in terms of the National Credit Act, there are various redresses that are available, one of which is that if a credit agreement is found to be reckless by a court of law or the tribunal, the court can set aside essentially. The court can say the debt is no longer payable by the consumer. So those would be the questions that related to the National Claims Regulator. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. An informative response. In fact, I'm quite impressed with the library behind you. It inspires confidence. Keep it up. I hope that those books are read. And I'm sure members will agree with me if I say there's a strong necessity that outreach programs should be the order of the day, so as to empower our people with information, especially where our people are taken for a ride, prescribed debts are sold, so as to illicitly gain out of those kind of transactions. It's important to share those that kind of information. Thank you very much. I take it that it's the last presenter.
Chair, there is Mr. Nkwase Mashamaite from the National Gambling Board, because there were several questions on the gambling mandate, and I forgot to mention the CIPC colleagues who can talk to the issues of the the IP law and how they're currently addressing some of the issues, even without the legislative framework that we're trying to address. So I request that after Ngwase, Ms. Nomonde and Dr. Gwele, they can talk to that issue. Thank you.
Okay.
Good morning, honorable members and colleagues from the DTI. Thanks for this opportunity. My name is Ngwase Mashamaide. I work for the National Gambling Board. In response to issues that were raised, mostly it was about the protection of our people. I'll just indicate that most of this is actually built in the gambling policy, the national gambling policy, as guided by the principles that were indicated in slide number 7, the Viahan Commission principles, mostly that we must protect the vulnerables from the latent harms that is associated with gambling, and that we must regulate gambling strictly to ensure the dignity and protection of the gamblers as well. So in dealing with the issues of the vulnerable, mostly you will note that we have limited opportunities for gambling in the country. In terms of policy, we have got a limited number of casinos that are permitted, and we have up to 41 licenses that are allowed to operate in the country, although not all 41 licenses are operational at the moment. And we have got limited payout machines, which were slot machines that were permitted to be played outside casinos, but they were limited in that people can only gamble a bet with at least 5 rand at a time, and they can win up to 500 rand per game. And this is the limitation just because the slot machines are outside casinos, and the people should not actually be frequenting them a lot and getting the opportunity that they will get in casinos. Sorry, is there?
No, that is touching. You know that whenever we meet, that is on.
Sorry?
I'm still in touch.
Okay.
Can I request that whatever input is being made, it is done through the chairperson so that there is order.
Can I proceed, Chair?
I proceed.
Yeah. No, I was just giving a brief background in terms of what protections are there in the legislation. In terms of what we do ourselves as the National Gambling Board, we do oversight on the provinces. The provinces are the ones who issue licenses to casinos, and they issue conditions for those licenses. And we conduct oversight, compliance oversight on provinces. We go there on inspection regularly to check that they do follow the principles that are in the National Gambling Act. And one of them is to ensure that they ensure that these people in their premises, they indicate that their place is allowing only people over the age of 18 to participate. And secondly, that there is help for people who might find themselves addicted to gambling. They can actually seek that help, with the message that winners know when to stop also displayed in the entrances as well. The other part that we also engage on is dispute resolution process. We also expect, when we do compliance oversight, to see that information is actually displayed so that gamblers can see, when there is a dispute, where do we go to lodge that? First, it will be with the provincial, the internal process in the licensed premises, and it will go to the provinces, provincial body. If they are not happy, it will be escalated to us, and we will try to mediate to ensure that a proper resolution is adopted in that regard. So this is basically what we do, trying to deal with those issues. We should recognize that in South Africa, the Constitution also allows a number of freedoms, and those freedoms include that you can't just tell a person that you cannot go and gamble. And hence, our legislation came up with the safeguard to say, if you feel that you are more vulnerable yourself, that you're getting addicted to gambling, you can actually apply to have your name excluded from gambling, and that you cannot be allowed to gamble for a certain period. You will apply to be readmitted at a later stage. This process also includes that third parties can also approach the relevant authorities for that assistance as well, if they see that a family member of theirs is also addicted. Of course, they wouldn't admit that they have a problem. So they will actually also get their names enlisted. At the moment, this is applied informally, as we are still finalizing the process. The process of regulations are still being finalized to introduce this provision, Section 14 of the Act, so that it is implemented properly. In that, when it is implemented, we'll have a national register where all licensed operators can see names of people who have excluded themselves and their pictures, and then they will also implement measures to ensure that those people are not allowed on the gambling floor. At the moment, it is applicable, but informally, so it applies to a license holder, and people will actually be excluded in terms of where they have applied. And this is one of the safeguards to try and prevent issues of addictive gambling. And we have partnered with the South African Responsible Gambling Foundation, an organization that is funded by the licensed operators in the country who contribute 0.1% of their gross gambling revenue towards funding this organization. It provides free counseling treatment service to addicted people who have problem gambling that need assistance. We have a toll-free line that people can actually contact to get assistance as well. It must also be noted, as indicated earlier by Dr. Masoja, we conduct education and awareness, and in that we try to educate our people that it is actually wrong to gamble with illegal operators, number one, because they can get arrested. The provisions in the Act requires that one can actually be sentenced to a period not exceeding 10 years, or be fined to a fine that is not exceeding 10 million. So this is the thing that we also teach our people, that be careful, do not gamble with illegal operators in the country. Instead, report them to the police, who will actually go and arrest those people and then have them also pay for conducting these illegal activities in the country. And they are also alerted that if you gamble with an illegal operator, your winnings might not be paid to you, because when the banks receive notification that they should pay you, they will first notify the National Gambling Board, who will do the investigation in terms of Section 16 of the Act. And in that investigation, if we find that the proceeds are from an illegal activity, the money will be forfeited to the state through the court. And that is basically what will happen. And unfortunately, it is the gamblers who will lose more, because they would have lost before they won the winnings that they have received. But yeah, in terms of the Act, those winnings will be confiscated and they will be forfeited to the state. And banks work with us. They do notify us about this kind of winnings, and we actually do investigate and get the money forfeited to the state. We have actually been doing that recently. And the other one is that on advertising, yes, there is a legislative provision nationally that requires that advertising must be responsible and it must not be extended to vulnerable people. And yes, advertising in peak hours is something that we also deal with. But as indicated, we do oversight, and as part of our oversight is to engage with the provinces to try and say, please, when you see this advert, you need to speak to your licensees to actually stop it and flight it at a reasonable time where vulnerable people are not still watching at the time of that. I think I have tried to cover everything that was indicated here where it concerns me. And yes, the other part, sorry, this is the last one. We are also responsible for assisting the provinces with dealing with enforcement against illegal gambling operations. And China, as it was indicated, or PAFI, as it is also known in the formalized act, is an illegal gambling activity that is not regulated in the country. And when we provinces deal with that, they also engage with us to try and manage the issue of illegal gambling, making sure that we are enforcing against this illegal operator. And at the moment, the National Gambling Board is on a national drive. We are actually establishing committees, enforcement committees, that will deal with illegal gambling. We are working with the police and setting up in every province with them and the National Prosecuting Authority, including the Financial Intelligence Center and all other stakeholders that are very much relevant in our quest, including the National Lotteries Commission, to try and combat illegal gambling in the country. And we are actually seeing positive approach, because there are a number of people that get arrested on illegal gambling activities, and there is a number of cases that are in court. But we believe that the police are very much in support of this initiative, and it will actually yield results that might help us to eliminate all, even our cyber illegal operators in the online gambling space. Thank you.
The next person is Nomonde Maimela with her colleague, Dr. Gwela.
Yes, I've already said so. Okay, hope they will also be as short as possible.
Okay, I'll be brief. Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Thank you, DDG Masoja, for the opportunity to respond on intellectual property-related issues. Let me say that the the Intellectual Property Law Amendment Act actually provides and deepens the necessity for registering of copyright related to our culture and indigenous knowledge. Copyright, it also enables us to register trademark and design that are indigenous. So we are actually working with the DSI as well as the department here to actually enable that to happen, so that we can get protection or we can get protection for indigenous related designs or copyright that are South African, so that, because we believe that protecting them under IP will be more effective, in that, you know, as you know, that IP registration actually details who the owner of IP is. So this will enable, you know, our communities to actually be identified as owners of these cultural designs that we are talking about. So we already have something that we are doing in the area of patents, where we force those who are registering patents related to genetic resources to actually declare that these patents are not indigenous in South Africa. I think I will allow Dr. Tandanani Kwele to talk about that. But as far as copyright and other, you know, designs and trademarks are concerned, we need to create, we actually talking about this, how we're going to do it, because there are a lot of other steps that are related to this registration in order for them to be completely protected. For instance, we need to decide how they are going to get the community prior informed consent. As you know, the Ndebeles, I'm sure you've seen that the BMW actually used the Ndebele design in some of their cars, their interior BMW. And we just want to make sure that the community also benefits for their cultural design being used, you know, in Europe. So that is not in place yet, and I believe that the IPLA Act will enable us to put these structures in place going forward. In terms of the benefit, once it is registered, then whoever comes, or when we see anybody in the international world using this, whatever it is, whether it's a design that is South African or a trademark or copyright cultural expression, we can actually do something about that. So there is a lot of work that still needs to be done in this area, just so that we are enabled to get our communities to actually benefit. There is also another area of structure that has been put in place, especially in Africa, that you are talking about, also in WIPO, which relates to the benefit sharing mechanism, so that the community can share, and not only one person who probably was clever enough to run with an indigenous knowledge or a cultural expression that belongs to the community. So let me allow Tandanani to just talk about what we do already within the current Patent Act as it relates to patent registration. Tandanani, you can clarify that one, because we think this is what we need to do with the other domains of IP as well. Tandanani, over to you.
Good day, Chair, and good day, members. I'll keep it short. And in the area of patents, whenever the invention derives from traditional knowledge, or somehow the inventor benefited from the indigenous knowledge or traditional knowledge, we already have in place as a requirement before the patent can be granted that the inventor must declare, or the applicant must declare, whether the invention was derived from indigenous knowledge or traditional knowledge. If that's the case, of course, one must provide proof that they received they had an agreement with the community that developed that traditional knowledge, or that are the custodian of that knowledge. So that's what is already in place. But I have no doubt when the patents bill may be stable, maybe it will strengthen this area. But I understand. For now, that's what we are doing. While IPLA as an act is not operational, I think that's all I wanted to say. Over to you.
Thank you very much. That seems to conclude presentations. Am I correct, Acting DG?
Yes, Chair, that's correct.
Okay. Now, honorable members, is there anything that, in your view, may have been left behind, such that one feels fundamentally that it has not been responded to, so that we can conclude? Members? Andre, you will guide me, those
Chair?
Who may have shown interest. Yes, Andre?
Just no hands, Chair.
Okay. Andre, is there any other item? remaining?
Chair, that there's no any further items on the agenda, is for you to conclude, Chair.
Okay. Members, noting that there's no further business, the meeting will now adjourn, and I will request that members take into account that we have a session at 2 o'clock. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.